You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR.
Yeah. Awesome. 3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land on which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders, past and present, of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m. Only double. Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners. If you're just tuning in, broadcasting live from 3CR at 8:55 a.m. It's Monday, the 28th of July, 2025. Welcome to the show. My name's Ed Mee. Normally, I'm here with Rob and Hannah. Hannah's away in Peru, and Rob is off working, so it's just me today holding down the fort. Almost at the end of July, which is beautiful, but it's been raining a lot in Melbourne. It's been very, very wet, so I hope people are staying dry, staying warm. Hope you're all warm in your beds or in your cars this morning on the way to work, whatever you're up to. I'm going to take you through a little rundown of what's going to be going on in the show this morning. So, first segment we will have is a snippet from Tuesday home time from July the 15th, last week. And to start off, we'll be playing a segment from the show where our 3CR broadcaster, Jan Bartlett, interviewed Nick McClellan. Nick McClellan is a journalist with Islands Business, and he pulls apart Macron's so-called historic agreement regarding New Caledonia and the Accords, which have recently been passed in French Parliament and will be put to a referendum in so-called New Caledonia next year in 2026. After that, item two, we'll be hearing a snippet from May from Roscoe from Radio Rata, who gave a talk at Camp Sovereignty about Kanaki and on the same topic of New Caledonia and the Accords, the Kanak perspective on the ground from what's been happening there, and the Indigenous Kanak people's experience and voice of resistance against France's ongoing colonial rule in their territory. After that, we'll be hearing a speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally from Samim Mosley. Samim is a community advocate and former independent candidate for the seat of Colwell. And following Samim's speech, we'll be hearing another speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally from Angelica Panopoulos. Angelica Panopoulos is a former Greens mayor and councillor at Marybeck Council. Also, would like to shout out all the activists, advocates, supporters, and people, human beings of Melbourne who went yesterday to the Free Palestine rally. Obviously, things are getting quite heated at the moment with media, but as the ongoing genocide continues and is being broadcast live over social media platforms everywhere, I think it's a very important time to be showing up, supporting each other, caring for each other, and continuing to fight the good fight. Thanks for listening. Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty now. One, two, nitty gritty now, yeah, boom. Nitty gritty. You're listening to 3CR at 8:55 a.m. and these are the news headlines for Monday, the 28th of July, 2025. Discussions about the future of France's colonial project in Kanaky, or so-called New Caledonia, have continued in the French Parliament. After 10 days, the new colonial accords have led to a, quote, fundamental law being inscribed in the French Constitution, opening up the electorate for a referendum vote in 2026, which will seek to validate the accords, and creating a Caledonian citizenship which allows for dual French Caledonian nationality. The referendum vote, inclusive of settlers born there or who have lived there for more than 10 years, has been staunchly opposed by the indigenous Kanak people since its proposal in 2023, leading to an uprising last year. Free Kanaky Solidarity NAM have likened the proposed referendum to the voice referendum seen here in Australia, in so-called Australia, in 2023, and described it as a project looking to, quote, strengthen colonial ties and, quote, further the agenda of the colonial project under the smokescreen of democracy, end quote. With the French government's attempts to reinforce and legitimise itself on the lands of the Kanak people, it has not consulted the Kanak people nor allowed parliamentary participation from the representatives of the pro-independence party, Kanak and Socialist Liberation Front, nor the Alliance of Kanak Kingdoms. The Organisation of Kanak Sovereign Chiefs, Inat Nair Kanaky, have said that, quote, we the Kanak sovereigns and customary authorities of the Alliance of Kanak Kingdoms wish to express our profound disagreement with a process that has been carried out without our consultation or participation, and that, quote, we are observing the negation of the indigenous people, end quote. With the inclusion of settlers born or living in so-called New Caledonia in the referendum being an attempt to, quote, structurally outweigh the indigenous Kanak people, the French government's colonial tactics are being viewed as efforts to, quote, consolidate French settler colonialism, end quote. The pro-independence party have shared their views, stating that, quote, unfreezing the electorate is synonymous with the recolonization of our country, and that, quote, the project offers very little prospect of breaking away from colonial oppression and proposes superficial attributes to sovereignty, end quote. Brenda Wanabo, a member of the Coordination of Grassroots Actions and a political prisoner deported and incarcerated in France, has stated that, quote, this text is signed without us. It does not commit to us, and that, quote, opening up the electorate means erasing us, end quote. To learn more, you can go to Free Kanaky Solidarity NAM on Instagram. Also on news this week, a snapshot analysis released by Homelessness Australia has outlined increases in homelessness for women and girls in the last term of government. Between May 2022 and March 2025, there's been a 20% increase in women and girls experiencing homelessness, and an 8% increase in those at risk. Of those women and girls seeking to engage in homelessness support systems, 45% have experienced domestic and family violence. The rising cost of living, renting, and buying homes sitting at expensive rates, domestic violence, a lack of early intervention, and overwhelmed services needing to prioritise those already experiencing sleeping rough were named by the analysis as key reasons behind the increases. Homelessness Australia and key support agencies have applied pressure to the government, with the CEO, Kate Colvin, saying that, quote, we acknowledge and welcome Labor's investments in social housing and homelessness, but the uncomfortable truth is that investment has not kept pace with demand, end quote. A proposed three-point plan of action by Homelessness Australia has called for, quote, a national housing and homelessness plan to set homelessness reduction targets and guide major reform across government, new investment in homelessness services in partnership with the states, an action to drive down the number of people becoming homeless by increasing social housing to 10% of all dwellings and increasing income support so people can afford rent, end quote. Earlier this week, Homes Victoria began demolition on public housing towers under the guise of redevelopment in North Melbourne, Richmond and Flemington. Save Public Housing Collective and 44 Flats United have rallied with activists and supporters to condemn the demolitions, which threaten to uproot existing communities, introduce privately owned sections, raise rents in nearby areas, and relocate residents indefinitely, potentially exacerbating the already rising risks of homelessness for girls and women in our communities. activists and advocates from Save Public Housing Victoria, amongst other local organisations, are calling for public support this morning at a community picket at 120 Racecourse Flemington from Racecourse Road in Flemington from 7:30 a.m, which starts in 20 minutes. The Victorian government and developers are drilling in and around the high-rise building. Residents and community organisations have requested support. That's 120 Racecourse Road, Flemington, from 7:30 today. 3CR. Also in news this week, Hendala, a civilian vessel carrying activists and aid to Palestine via sea, has been violently interrupted by the Israeli military, according to the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. The ship, carrying life-saving supplies and aid, was intercepted 40 nautical miles north of Gaza and still considered to be in international waters. The humanitarian aid being carried on the vessel included food, nappies, baby formula, medicine, and, quote, all cargo was non-military, civilian, and intended for direct distribution to a population facing deliberate starvation and medical collapse under Israel's illegal blockade, end quote. With the Hendala Freedom Flotilla carrying 21 human beings from 12 different countries, all of the 21 have been abducted by the Israeli military. Two of the 21 are Australians Robert Martin, a human rights activist and programmer on 3CR's Palestine Remembered, and Tanya Tan Safi, a journalist and organizer of Lebanese descent. With the ongoing genocide in Gaza being broadcast globally via social media, we are now bearing witness to famine and starvation as Israeli officials continue to ignore the International Court of Justice, which states that Israel is required to facilitate humanitarian access into Gaza. The Hendala is the third Freedom Flotilla of its kind to attempt to reach Gaza with food and aid this year, following efforts from human beings internationally aboard the Conscience and the Madeleine. Anne Wright from Freedom Flotilla Steering Committee has insisted that, quote, this is not a matter of international jurisdiction. These are foreign nationals operating under international law in international waters. Their detention is arbitrary, unlawful, and must end. These have been the news headlines for Monday the 28th of July, and you're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
If you're experiencing family violence, free legal support is available. You may need support with obtaining protection, setting up safe parenting arrangements, organising a new visa, getting into safe housing, or making sure bills and bank accounts are split fairly. Community legal centres have expertise in helping people who experience family violence and can provide confidential advice to help you understand your rights and legal options. Reach out today for guidance and support. Visit www.fclc.org.au and click Get Help to find a community legal centre near you. You don't have to face family violence alone. If you're currently in crisis, please contact Safe Steps on 1800 015 188. Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. My name is Ed Mee, and this morning I will be starting off our show with a segment from Tuesday Home Time last Tuesday. To start off, we'll be playing an interview from 3CR presenter Jan Bartlett, who spoke with Nick McClellan, a journalist with Islands Business, as he pulls apart Macron's so-called historic agreement regarding New Caledonia and the accords which have recently been passed in French Parliament and will be put to a referendum in 2026.
On the programme last week, journalist with Ireland's Business, Nick McCullen, spoke about the meeting in Paris where the French president met with New Caledonian elected officials and state representatives to discuss an agreement aimed at granting the island more autonomy. The meeting went for over a week and resulted in the French Prime Minister Macron announcing that it was a historic agreement proposing a state within a state. When I spoke to Nick again, I asked him if this meeting went for a long time.
The talks were quite drawn out. President Macron had invited everyone to Paris starting on the 2nd of July, as well as the political leaders from six different parliamentary groups. There was also a bevy of business leaders, community leaders, some customary leaders brought to Paris for a parallel meeting on economic and social issues. The talks were on and off over a week, and indeed they almost broke down. You know, there's a fundamental difference of opinion between the independence movement, who obviously want a political independence and sovereignty for New Caledonia, and the so-called loyalist anti-independence parties who want to stay within France. And to square that circle has been very difficult. Indeed, it was only after days and days of talks where some issues were agreed, but those fundamental questions about sovereignty were still in dispute. FLNKS leadership held a video conference with members of the political bureau of the independence movement back in Noumea. It looked like the talks were about to collapse, but finally people were persuaded that the compromises needed to be made, and the balance of forces was not great. And so the deal was signed very early on the morning of the 12th of July.
That's the trouble, though, with compromises, isn't it, Nick? People aren't happy with a compromise.
And that's certainly the case with this agreement known as the Bougival Accord. After it was in the town of Bougival, which is just on the outskirts of Paris, that people were locked away in a hotel for this period. It's very clear that a lot of people are angry back in New Caledonia about the various compromises that were made by political leaders, both supporters and opponents of independence. For example, one of the leading anti-independence people, the second vice president of the southern province, very conservative, indeed reactionary guy called Philippe Blaise, has come out denouncing the signature of the agreement by the key loyalist leaders. At the same time, the independence movement, there's been a lot of flack for the key negotiators from both Union Caledonienne and Palika, the feeling that the compromises that they made to strike a deal really set back rather than improve the move to independence. There's a lot in the agreement that will raise real questions on both sides. The other point, though, to stress is this is not signed, sealed, and delivered. There is a political agreement, and leaders pledged that they'd come back to try and sell it to their party members, to their electoral constituency. But there's a whole series of steps that have to be taken to translate it into law, and that's going to take months and months. And the tight timetable that's been set for that, it's not, that could be disrupted by a whole range of things unrelated to New Caledonia, particularly the political chaos in France, where the Conservative government led by Prime Minister François Bayrou might collapse in a no-confidence motion in the next few months. Lots of moving parts in this, and I think it's important to say, although the headline said this is an historic agreement, everyone's agreed on this, that's not true. There are fundamental debates going on within New Caledonia. It has to be passed through the French Parliament, National Assembly and Senate in Paris, sometime possibly in September, October. And it has to go to a referendum in New Caledonia for New Caledonians to vote whether they accept or reject this political deal. So let's wait and see. There's a lot still going to happen in coming weeks and months.
And what are the main issues now?
There are a few stumbling blocks within it. For the independence supporters and people I've spoken to and certainly watching on social media and reading press communiques and so on, there's a lot of concern about it. The fundamental issue about full and sovereign political independence has been deferred once again. This is not an independence agreement immediately. Similarly, there's provisions in the agreement that strengthen the power of the southern province. The three provinces in New Caledonia, the two in the rural areas and the outlying islands, the Loyalty Islands, the Northerners province, are both connect majority population and have been run by the independence movement for the last 25, 30 years. The southern province, however, is a bastion of the so-called loyalist or anti-independence parties. And what we see in this agreement is a series of measures that strengthen the administrative and financial powers of the southern province. Indeed, there's a proposal to change and increase the number of seats in the Congress, the local parliament of New Caledonia, that would add some seats for the southern province, which has got a larger population, take away seats, particularly from the Loyalty Islands. So that sort of angered people. Most importantly, one of the big issues that triggered the conflict last year was a debate about changing voting rights for New Caledonia's local political institutions, the three provincial assemblies, the Congress. There's a restricted electorate of so-called New Caledonian citizens. That, you know, has been argued about for 20 years, about how do you expand or reduce the number of people who could vote locally. And this agreement expands the numbers of people by saying that New Caledonian-born citizens can vote, and if you're resident for 15 years or more continuously in New Caledonia. Now, that will add a number of people, thousands of people, to the voting rolls, and people may remember that this was one of the central issues that triggered the violent conflicts last year, the riots and protests that pitted Kanak activists against French police. I think many young activists, and some I've spoken to, are concerned that, you know, they fought on the barricades last year, and yet this change has come through as part of this overall agreement.
Well, not only fought on the barricades, but died.
That's right. Of 14 people who died last year, 11 were Kanak, particularly young Kanak. And, you know, more than that, you know, there were more than 2,600 arrests, most of them protesters, last year. And so people are still living with the, you know, court cases and so on that are still playing out even months after the end of the clashes. And people's, you know, lives are pretty tough. I was there a month or so ago and in New Caledonia. And, you know, the economy's not good. The nickel industry's been in trouble for a couple of years. Last year, one in six people lost their jobs in the private sector. So when you talk to trade unions there, you know, people are just doing it tough. A lot of unemployment, a lot of people who've done stuff. And friends told me that, you know, there's a lot of burglaries and things. And it's not just petty delinquents, but it's young people breaking in to steal food from houses. So times are tough. And the trauma and legacy of 6 months of conflict in 2024 are still playing out in New Caledonia. I think it's worth stressing, though, that on the other side, there's anger. As I mentioned, Philippe Blaise and other loyalists, you read the French media, French conservatives, politicians and pundits are really angry about this deal because it talks about significant constitutional changes. The proposal is that there be a state of New Caledonia, like a nation state of New Caledonia within the French Republic, and that the existing New Caledonian citizenship, which has existed since the Nouméa Accord was signed more than 25 years ago, that be transformed into a New Caledonian nationality alongside the French nationality, so people would have both French and New Caledonian nationality. Now, that raises a whole series of constitutional questions. This won't be defined for more than a year until after the next elections, but the contours of the state, this idea of it being a state, would allow for international recognition, for example. And for some French conservatives, this is a major philosophical and legal challenge to the notion that France is one indivisible republic, as the constitution, the French constitution says. You know, France is France. And to have the notion of a state within a state, look, I don't know how this is going to play out, and indeed many independence people think that there are some quite restrictive qualifications on whether this state would ever come into existence. It has to pass through major changes in the Congress, and I won't go into all the details, but this is not something that's going to happen tomorrow, in spite of what the headlines suggest, that this agreement creates a new state. It's a long way down the track. But many French conservatives are worried about a slippery slope, that if you start talking about New Caledonia as a state, rather than just as a territory of France, that's a really fundamental philosophical and ultimately political challenge to the people who says that this is France in the South Pacific. It's not. Independence people have always said it's a colony of France, administered by France, but that it's not part of France. Conservatives, although they see this potential change hemmed in by all sorts of rules and restrictions that may make it very unlikely, they worry that this will open the floodgates. And certainly people in other places in the French Empire, French Polynesia or Guadeloupe and other parts of other French colonies, are watching all of this with great attention, figuring, hey, if New Caledonia can be a state within a state, why are we still a territory?
Where does it leave the issue of decolonisation?
Well, some people I've spoken to in the independence movement are very concerned that this basically locks the decolonisation process up in French constitutional law, you know, the fundamental law that would bring this political agreement into law has to be passed by the French Parliament, enshrined in the French Constitution. And there's a concern from some that this will take away from broader United Nations principles of decolonisation. The key negotiators for the independence movement disagree. They put out a statement saying this is a major step forward, reaffirming the right to self-determination, the right to an independent nation. It's going to take a long time to play out. There's going to be a lot of argy-bargy in the coming weeks as people debate this. Most people I know and spoken to over the last week haven't really got the detail of the agreement. It hasn't been, and so there's going to be a whole political education process and certainly lots of debate within New Caledonia. The French Parliament is due to develop what's called a fundamental law, a basic law, to translate this political agreement into law, and then it can be enshrined in the French Constitution to replace the Lumière Accord. But all of this is supposed to happen in September, October, but that's the very time that France will be going through its budgetary debates. And unrelated to New Caledonia, there are moves to bring down the Bayrou government. The Rassemblement National Party, the extreme right party led by Marine Le Pen, is angry with President Macron and his government. The chance of Bayrou losing power in a no-confidence motion is not zero. The very tight timetable set by the French to get all this stuff through for New Caledonia is going to be thrown up in the air if there's no government for a period, even if it's just for weeks. It sets back the timetable. If they want to get stuff through France this year and then have a referendum next February, it's not that far away, and there's a whole lot of things that have to be done legally and constitutionally to make all this happen. So I think the key message is the headlines, you know, that France and New Caledonia have signed an agreement to create a state. Well, yeah, they've signed the agreement, but it's not locked in yet. And I think this is going to continue for some months.
Two comments. Will this allow Canucks and others in New Caledonia to move forward rather than be divided? And the other is, last year, the young were willing to die for Kanaki.
Just over the last week or so, I think there's quite mixed reactions within New Caledonia. On the one hand, many business people and community leaders are pleased that finally, after literally years of talks and negotiations, that political leaders have forged a consensus. And when you get into the, you know, it's a 13-page document, when you get into the detail, there are a number of issues where there are agreement about some administrative reforms in New Caledonia, about the priority around elections and the economy and so on. So there are certainly areas of convergence, public statements from, say, the key business community leaders, they welcome the agreement. But there's also a lot of grumbling in the ranks on both sides, independent supporters and opponents, and I think that's going to take some time to play out. That mixed reaction will, I think, get more complex as people actually read and digest the fine point and qualifications. There's a couple of really major steps forward that create openings for a move to continue to decolonisation. One of them, for example, under the agreement, France will continue to control some of the so-called sovereign powers over courts and policing, over the military, over the currency, you know, maintaining the French Pacific franc. But the power over foreign affairs is going to be vested with the government of New Caledonia if all of this passes into law. Now, to have a pro-independence president with the power for foreign affairs is going to really transform issues. that power is supposed to be wielded taking account of the interests of France. But there are a number of issues where New Caledonian visions of the world really fundamentally are different to French visions of the world. You think of everything from issues around nuclear weapons to self-determination and solidarity with West Papua, to maritime boundaries, to trade issues. Vanuatu and New Caledonia under the previous independence president, Louis Mapu, signed a trade deal that has been stymied and blocked by French officials and diplomats. If New Caledonia runs foreign affairs to a certain extent, that could potentially create all sorts of new areas for dispute, but also advancement. Because ultimately, New Caledonians, obviously, especially the indigenous Kanak and the independence movement, want to integrate with their neighbours, with Australia, with New Zealand, particularly with neighbouring Melanesian countries, to work together on issues of common concern. France is hanging on by the fingernails as a colonial power, a quarter of the way through the 21st century, to say this is still France. And so when you look at this step about a state within a state, it's really complex. It's certainly not happened yet. It's got a long way to go before it's implemented. But for many people, this is going to be a real challenge to the notion that this is just a little bit of France in the South Pacific. It's a significant philosophical change. How it plays out politically, well, the struggle goes on.
Much to talk about in the coming months, Nick.
Indeed, this ain't over yet. Thanks as always, Jan.
And many thanks once again to journalist with Ireland's Business, Nick McClellan.
Hi, I'm Ahmed from Fidro Primary School, and you're listening to Community Radio on 3CR.
Ils ont partagé le monde, plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne. Ils ont partagé le monde, plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne. Si tu me laisses la Tchétchénie, moi je te laisse l'Arménie. Si tu me laisses l'Afghanistan, moi je te laisse le Pakistan. Si tu ne quittes pas Haïti, moi je t'embarque pour Bangui. Si tu m'aides à bombarder l'Irak, moi je t'arrange le Kurdistan. Ils ont partagé le monde, plus rien ne m'étonne. Plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne. Ils ont partagé le monde, plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne. Si tu me laisses l'uranium, moi je te laisse l'aluminium. Si tu me laisses tes gisements, moi je t'aide à chasser les talibans. Tu me donnes beaucoup de blé, moi je fais la guerre à tes côtés. Si tu me laisses accès ton or, moi je t'aide à mettre le général dehors. Ils ont partagé le monde, plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne, plus rien ne m'étonne. Ils ont partagé le monde. Ils ont partagé Africa sans nous consulter. Ils s'étonnent que nous soyons désunis. Une partie de l'empire mandingue se trouva chez les Wolofs. Une partie de l'empire Mossi se trouva dans le Ghana. Une partie de l'empire Soussou se trouva dans l'empire mandingue. Une partie de l'empire mandin se trouva chez les Mossi.
ils ont partagé Africa sans nous consulter, sans nous demander, aïe aïe aïe, sans nous aviser. Ils ont partagé le monde, lui rien ne m'étonne, lui rien ne m'étonne, lui rien ne m'étonne. Ils ont partagé le monde.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. If you're just tuning in, that was Plia Ne Metan by Tikajar Folly, excuse my French. And before that, we heard an interview by Jan Bartlett with Nick McClellan, a journalist with Ireland's Business, as he pulls apart Macron's so-called historic agreement regarding New Caledonia, dual citizenship, and the new accords, which are going to be put to a referendum next year, and which will determine their, I guess, the state of the territory, the ongoing colonial French project, which is happening on Indigenous Kanak territory. So to follow up with that, up next, we have a segment from Roscoe from Radio Rada. During May, he, on the Kanaki uprising anniversary, Roscoe spoke to the reality of the Indigenous Kanak people on the ground in so-called New Caledonia and their experience and voice of resistance against France's ongoing colonial rule.
Thanks, Emma. Yeah, so Saint-Louis is what they call a tribute. In much the same way that pretty much every town in Australia has a boundary street or a series of boundary streets that signify where, or as close as Aboriginal people were allowed into town. Noumea has the same thing. It's ringed, with a 17-kilometre ring around Noumea with these tribu. One of the tribu is Saint-Louis. Saint-Louis is one of the places where the militants from the 74 to 84 Civil War were relocated. So the 74 to 84 Civil War was basically fought in the countryside. This latest insurrection has been an urban street war, if that's the way to put it. And so Saint-Louis is where they moved everybody from 74 to 84. When the troubles started on May 13, the GIGN, which is a French death squad, previously called the SPFX, I think that's how you say it. They had been in Guadeloupe in 1957. They'd been chucked out of Martinique for being too violent. They were renamed the GIGN. They turned up in Kanaki with a death list of 55 people, a hit list of 55 people. They put a big sign up saying, wanted dead or alive. Of the 55, 13 are either killed or missing. 19 were arrested. Before the GIGN pretended to go home. The French staged a big kind of event, well, not a big event, but they made a big song and dance about how the GIGN were going home, but they've never left. Emma was talking about, before, was talking about the militarisation of Kanaki. There's 8,000 soldiers have been moved to Kanaki. As we said before, there's only 120,000 people in Noumea. There's 8,000 soldiers. They all live at the Hilton down on the beach. They all have those weird Hitler haircuts that everybody, that all the kind of soldiers wear these days, and they're routinely 6'3" and kind of blonde. It's extraordinary, in fact, to see them all kind of jogging around town. They jog around town in little outfits. You know, there's red. I noticed there's red-shirted and blue-shirted dudes, and blue-shirted and red-panted dudes, and there's a whole bunch of them, and they do their morning calisthenics on the beach, and it's all very public. And so these are the fellows that turned up in this place called San Luis, and as you can see, did a very familiar thing. They built a big fence around San Luis and basically laid siege to the place for six, 8 months with a 6 to 6 curfew. Now, one of the rules of the curfew is that you're not supposed to, the military's not supposed to go into anyone's homes during the curfew, but of course, that's precisely when they do go into people's homes. Now, remember, the GIGN are Israeli trained. So they do that same thing. They turn up to your house, turn it into a command post, turn all the people out, separate the boys from the men and the women, and then tell all the boys that they must inform on their fathers and their brothers and their uncles and their cousins. And then the next morning when they wake up, someone across town had been murdered. This happened looks like about 8 times. The French will say there weren't that many occasions, but that's what it looks like. To leave a message, to send a message. Now, while I was there, I was saying before, initially I go there as a kind of collecting testimony from people who lost people. But while I was there, 2 boys were killed. And the French responded by saying that those 2 boys were killed because they fired on the French security forces. They were shot through. The explanation was they both suffered single gunshot wounds that were fired through the sniper turret of a armored vehicle, like you saw before. The only problem with that was that one of those boys was found naked in the Dumbia Creek, naked, and he'd been raped with a stick. Again, these are very familiar sounding activities. We've heard this in the last 18 months over and over and over again. And so the siege of San Luis went on for an extended period of time. And remembering too, San Luis is on the highway. So they blocked off the highway so you couldn't move across or get out of Noumea without going through San Luis. And so there's a checkpoint there, and it's I've never seen anything like this. You know, like at any one time while I was there, 100 soldiers at a checkpoint, 5 or 6 armored vehicles. And the checkpoint, it's not just one spot. There's about 7 of them along the way, it gets progressively more busy or more onerous, I guess, a kilometre down the road from the checkpoint, there's a couple of soldiers. Then a couple of 100 metres, there's 20 soldiers. And a couple of 100 more metres, there's, until you get to the end and there's a big mob of soldiers. And they were patting down 4-year-olds. They were stopping little kids who were on their way to school and checking their bags. This has caused Kanaki a great amount of stress. In fact, Gwendol, the lad that kind of drove me around and did the interpreting for me, is a psychologist and who works with young people. And he's developed a program to kind of deprogram the young people from the stress that they have kind of endured because of the siege of San Luis. This is the same as we've been witnessing on our telephones for months and months and months. San Luis has been opened up a little bit now. The last time I was in Kanaki in November, I went to a bingo day in San Luis. Bingo is very popular in San Luis. If you're a woman, every woman in San Luis plays bingo pretty much every day, every afternoon. And so we went to this bingo morning, and one of the problems has been the lack of coverage. And so Uncle Coco up in McGangin camped outside the ABC for 4 nights trying to convince them to get involved in the coverage. They didn't. But what they did do is they employed a French TV company to do the reporting or produce the content for ABC, Pacific Radio, TV and digital. And while I was there at San Luis this day, the French film crew was there, and I was with Sinuami, the king of Gerasheba, the king of Kanaki. And I went up to the French reporter and I said, I've got the King of Kanaky over here. And he said, I'm not interested. I said, what are you talking about? He said, we've been told not to talk to any Autochton. So Autochton is a word that the Kanak use, basically meaning sovereign or customary owner under colonization. And so the French TV company that's been employed to tell the story about what's happening in Kanaky, don't talk to anybody that's a customary owner, a customary leader. They only talk to the CCAT, the union movement, and others. And so the customary leaders have been shut out of all of the negotiation that's going on in the country around reconstruction. I think that's pretty much it, I think. That's Sinowami, the dude in the green shirt. Sinowami... one of those previous slides talked about a referenda. There were three referenda in Kanaky about self-government. The Noumea Accord and all of that led to a process for self-government. And there were three referenda on self-government, the third of which was held during COVID, and the Kanaky refused to take part. Those referenda... Huh?
I'm trying to find it.
Okay, that's all right. Those referenda, the last one that the Kanaky didn't take part in, still only got under 50%, even though there were no Kanaky involved in the vote. The settlers couldn't get the numbers either. So this is a difficulty. I also want to say one of the things Emma talking about before. What the French did with the nickel industry, they imported labour from other Pacific Island countries into Kanaky and wouldn't let the Kanaky work. And so as a consequence, during the Civil War, the people that had been imported, the labour, you know, the descendants of the people that had been imported, a lot of those people fought on the side of the French. One of the things that Kanaky had been able to do in the subsequent years through strategic marriage is to bring a lot of those people back in. And so to the point that Kanaky won control of the Congress. That's what, from my point of view, that's what kind of sparked Macron's insistence that Kanaky is France. As I say, Kanaky had got control of the parliament. They are about 47% of the population. Without the electoral gerrymander that was proposed, which was adding 45,000 French citizens to the electoral roll, without that, the French would never be able to get back control of the government. That's what this is about. We've seen it in the subsequent time, now that now there is a settler-led government in power, when previously there was a Kanaky-led government in power. That settler government has come to power by withholding supply from the Kanaky government and winning a vote in the House, not a plebiscite, not an election. In fact, they suspended the election, which was supposed to be in December last year. It was supposed to be the equivalent of our federal election. They've suspended that indefinitely and used the Siege of St. Louis as the kind of reasoning behind it.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. If you're just tuning in, that was Roscoe from Radio Rada giving a speech at Camp Sovereignty in May this year regarding the Kanaky uprising and the experience of the indigenous Kanak people on the ground in their territory, which France colonized in 1850, 1860, and are still colonization is still an ongoing process there. You're listening to 3CR. I'm Ed Mead. Thanks for tuning in.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Sovereignty now. The war don't stop till we all become sovereign. Militant minds plan to rise to our dominance. Apocalypse looming. All breathe oxygen so this shit affects everybody that's a human. Rise up, true spitter till my time's up. I line up the government who conjuring them lies up. They criticize us, we are one.
one people, one cycle, one earth, sun steeple, full circle in hell, let the love reach you, activate the minds, motivate others, so I represent for my great brothers and sisters, the war path, I'm walking it now, no negotiation, ain't no talking us down, fuck the federation, and the corporate crown, hear you patriotic fools singing wealth for toil, but the wealth ain't yours when it's held by royals, and everybody protests when it's blood for oil, but not indigenous blood on the soil, blood boils, flows on the riverbed and burns through the veins of the people like a cigarette, ain't finished yet, it's only beginning, there's a shitstorm coming, they could never envision when the people rise up, nothing is stopping, we saw on invasion day, time to fight for our sovereignty, sovereign, sovereign, the war don't stop till we all become sovereign.
It's time for action, this is bigger than just rapping, Aboriginal man, see, I was born captive, feeling like a prisoner in my own homeland, all my life I wonder how I feel to be a free man, police watch us and courts put the boys in jail, and institutionalized racism in place for us to fail, add to that land theft, poverty and cultural genocide, life of a black fella 365, so maybe you can understand now why we strive, why we fight, why we protest, why we demonstrate, get it straight, I'm from the same brain as Pemaway, John DeMarra, my boy Hina, 10 minutes away, same blood that ran through their veins, run through my veins, same system they fought, I fight their pain, it's my pain, I live and breathe it, walk it, talk it, and bleed it, see we never had a treaty, so sovereignty was never ceded,
sovereign, sovereign, the war don't stop till we all become sovereign,
the war was never finished, it's been going for hundreds of years, all over the fucking world, you know we bring your brother to tears, but I gotta be drying that shit up, so one of my people can rise up, we gotta be keeping the fight up, so we can continue to light up, our sacred fires we keeping them burning, Gungis in the face, but despite their interference, we will never be replaced. Our street warriors out there every single fucking day, and they be fighting for our freedom, trying to find a better way, so we can overrule these government and be living in better days. The gatekeepers ain't giving the keys, so fuck what they got to say. We kicking in the doors, and we ain't gonna be out of no more. When it's only a matter of time before we're the ones in power, they fall. Living in the redneck country, thinking that they can all hide all the shit that they done to a mob, indigenous genocide. So for all the babies stolen and the warriors that all died, we gotta be keeping on fighting to get us already recognized.
Sovereign. The war don't stop till we all become sovereign.
I stand strong for land rights. Me, I mean the land's right. Cause sovereignty to me, it means we get to treat the land right. That's my stand plight. Keep my future plans right. Cause negative plus negative is negative that lands twice. Why keep my hands tied? We can't expand pride. Gather rain, fuck the fluoride. Like sorry man, I've never been your lamb price. Sunday coming soon, I'm eating kangaroo and rice. Be conscious now of all sides. Respect and understand nice. Make reciprocity strong to withstand strife. Need my name in no man's lights. Wish for peace, but I can't fight. Realize we're living land's life.
That's right. Thanks, sis. Maria, straight up now. I'm gonna tell him. Yeah, bro, straight up tricks. Huh. Every day the government be denying my sovereignty. Still trying to put me in chains to stay in poverty. They wonder why some brothers do robberies. It's cause they don't know their language or their corroborees. So that's the priority. Land they stole from us. Skeletons and museums they still hold from us. All they want is control on us. For blacks, that's a fact that I'm on the dole for what? The Prime Minister can go get fucked. And every other politician that be there keeping us stuck. For the people I speak and we've had enough. And if we don't get our land rights, a lot of spears be chucked. So what?
Sovereign, sovereign, the war don't stop till we all become sovereign.
We're free to enjoy each other, love and this experience. Make time to cry and still marvel at our brilliances. We can learn to live, laugh and cry. Yes, it's hard. Learn just one word. Listen and smile. Play with children. Run a mile. Our minds need exercise. Soon we'll all realise with these strong bloodlines it's still our time to swim in our waters, eat our food. With all the problems with mood, with all that's begun, what invasion really done? Originate, part of you's and part of me. Me and you, you and you. We gotta become we. We all branches of that one tree. That's how you put an end to world hostility. Cause we're the deadliest, the strugglers, they gon' bleed us, we gon' lead us. Cause we're the deadliest, we're the strugglers, they gon' bleed us, we gon' lead us. This song is dedicated to the sufferers of invasions. Their experiences are a direct result of systems gone wrong from the beginning. Who feels it the most? The disadvantaged. Even though they don't engage in it in any way, they experience the brink of the rapes, the violence, the murders, the drugs, degradation, and overall disregard of one of the most greatest treasures of all time, humankind, humankind, humankind.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. Thank you for tuning in. That was Sovereign by Chaotic One, Dara, Fallon, Taylor, Trix, and Caillou. I'll put the song link in the show notes after the show under Monday Breakfast. If you're just tuning in, if you're on the way to work, in bed, whatever you're doing this morning, sending some good energy your way. Hope you win the week. It's a Monday, it's middle of winter, it's rainy, it's wet, but yeah, it's important to stay strong in your resistance with all that's going on at the moment. Obviously, this ongoing genocide is pretty hectic. We need to keep showing up, though, and we need to show up for each other. We need to make sure we're showing up for ourselves with radical softness and caring for each other and community. It's really important. Up next, we'll be playing a speech from Samim Mosli at yesterday's Free Palestine rally held outside the State Library. Samim is a community advocate and a former independent candidate for the seat of Caldwell.
Now I will introduce our first speaker. I've got a lot to say today, so please bear with me. But I will introduce our first speaker to get this going. Samim Muslah is a community advocate and former independent candidate for the seat of Caldwell. Born in Afghanistan and raised in a so-called Australia after arriving at the age of 8 as a refugee, he's a principled voice for justice in Palestine, calling for a decolonized future. Please put your hands together for Samim.
I too commence by acknowledging the traditional owners on the land on which we meet and pay my respects to the elders past and present and emerging. Brothers and sisters, friends, let me tell you something that is raw for me and real for me. As a refugee, as a displaced people at the time of the conflict in Afghanistan, we would have times where we would lose hope. But then we would actually hear through the radio somewhere in the world a crowd gathering, rallying, and calling for the end to the occupation of my land. And that would give us hope. So let me say to you, that what we're doing right now, this is not a waste of our time. What we're doing right now, rallying and calling out the injustices and calling for a just peace for the Palestinian people and for their freedom, this voice will carry to Gaza. This will reach the mothers who are holding on to their children while the airstrikes are pounding on their land. The people who are starving, they will hear these voices and it will give them hope. So none of this is a waste of time, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. But I'm here today because I'm angry. And I know many of you, and every single one of you, I should say, is absolutely angry. I'm angry that we're being lied to again and again. That they say Israel is defending itself. They say Palestinians are terrorists. They say this is too complex, too messy, too hard to talk about. But let's tell the truth. Palestinians are being slaughtered, starved, wiped out in front of the whole world. And our Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, speaks in soft tones, gestures at peace, uses carefully crafted words that steer away from condemning genocide and ethnic cleansing. But while he speaks, with one hand and then enables genocide with the other. And let's ask a question no parliament dares to. Let's ask that question that no one in our parliament dares to. Who is the terrorist? Who is the terrorist? Who is the terrorist? Is it the mother trying to feed her child in Gaza with no food or clean water? or the government dropping bombs on entire apartment blocks. The people of Palestine, even those accused of extremism, they do not ask for us to do anything but to be their voice. They're not asking you to fight for them. They are not asking you to send weapons. They're asking us to raise our voices, to protest, to speak out, to stand up in our countries inside the legal system, inside our rights, and say, this is wrong. And for that, they are punished, killed, starved, silenced. And we are being silenced too. Gaza has provided a tear in the fabric of time, giving us a window into the colonial past. We've been told for too long that colonialism was about building, that colonists came to teach, to uplift, to civilize. But let me ask you, is bombing schools uplifting? Is starving a population civilization? Is dropping white phosphorus on bodies progress? This is not civilization. This is not justice. This is not democracy. This is genocide, and our government needs to name it. It is common knowledge that if you want to stop a disease, you need to first diagnose correctly. Otherwise, you are treating the wrong thing. However, our governments are in the business of misdiagnosis, because the real disease is too confronting, as it may require an internal scanning of our own body of history, which would uncover the past but fresh scars of genocide within, right here in our own country. They want us to stay quiet. They want us to believe that calling out Israel is anti-Semitic. They want us afraid to speak the truth, afraid to stand for human life. But we are not afraid. Are we afraid?
No.
Are we afraid?
No.
Are we afraid?
No.
We are not afraid of speaking out for the voiceless. We are not afraid of standing against power. And we are not afraid to say, Palestinian lives matter. Palestinian resistance is justified. Palestinian people are human beings. Just imagine what a low point it is in human history that we need to acknowledge that Palestinians are human too. And to those in government who say we want peace, but this isn't the way, tell us what is the way. Because Palestinians are marching. They're filing cases in international courts. They're writing, singing, praying, resisting with all your conventions and the conventions that you don't follow. And still they are being buried alive. Still they are being buried alive. So don't tell us how to protest. Don't tell the oppressed how to speak. If you're neutral in times of injustice, you're not neutral. You're on the side of the oppressor. And my brothers and sisters, my friends, don't be fooled for a second. The Australian Labor government is not neutral. Every time Israel uses bomb-releasing mechanism provided by Australian weapons manufacturers to drop bombs on the forcibly displaced Palestinians who are starving, it shows our government's bias towards genocide. And to all of you here, stand strong, march loud, and let me tell you, you are powerful. You are not wasting your time. This is not just a rally, this is a lifeline. Just like my family and I heard through a crackling radio of crowds halfway around the world and felt hope. Today, Palestinians in Gaza may see and hear us and feel hope. They will know that they are not alone. And I tell you, that is such an important feeling, to know that you are not alone in the midst of this genocide, in the midst of the occupation. They know that that someone is shouting their name. Someone is shouting their name. Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
They will know that even in the dark.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. That which you just heard was a speech from Samim Mosley at yesterday's Free Palestine rally held outside the State Library. Samim is a community advocate and former independent candidate for the seat of Colwell.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM on the dial. If you're just tuning in, that was Kuzik Inner Visions. Up next, we'll be playing another speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally from Angelika Panopoulos. Angelina is a former Greens mayor and councillor at Merribeck Council.
Right now, the next speaker. The next speaker is Angelika Panopoulos. She's a former Greens mayor and councillor at Merribeck Council and is a long-term refugee rights and environmental campaigner. Please put your hands together for Angelika.
Thank you, Noor, and thank you to all of you for being here today. I too want to acknowledge that we are having this rally on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people and pay my respects to elders past and present and acknowledge that the fights for justice across social and environmental movements, they are intrinsically intertwined in this country. So this week was the first week back at Parliament following the federal election. It saw days of action outside and inside the Parliament calling on the Albanese government to actually do something about this genocide. Gaza is starving. Words won't feed them. Sanction Israel. These are the words that Green Senator Maureen Faruqi held up in Parliament during the Governor General's speech. And that should be applauded. But what happened instead, the response from the political establishment, well, that was swift. They condemned Maureen for her actions and they sanctioned her. Shame on Anthony Albanese and Penny Wong, who claimed that this was attention seeking. They claimed that this undermined the sanctity of the parliamentary processes. I'm sorry, what alternative reality are we living in when we care more about parliamentary processes than we do an active and unfolding genocide? What kind of alternative reality are we living in when they will sanction Senator Faruqi, but they won't sanction Israel? Well, exactly. The One Nation senators decided to turn their backs during the acknowledgement and the welcome to country. Where was the swift and wide condemnation of them? It didn't exist. Gaza is starving. Words won't feed them. Sanction Israel. When they write the history books, they will look back at what the political establishment, what our Labour government did or did not do in the face of this live-streamed genocide. They will look back at what we, the people, did in the face of these atrocities. And so we need to ask ourselves, have we used whatever platform, whatever privilege that we have to call for an end to the bloodshed? And that is why, when I was the mayor of Merribeck Council, I was so proud of our council and so proud to have supported one of the very first motions in a council across the country, standing in solidarity with the people of Palestine, flying the Palestinian flag, and also giving small grants to organizations that were helping people that had just arrived from Gaza. Now, this was towards the end of 2023, and I remember being told to stay in my lane. I remember being told that we were causing division in the community. I remember being told that I was too young to understand what was happening. But it wasn't complex then, and it sure as hell isn't complex now. Standing against genocide, standing up for human rights, it is always the right thing to do. Now, it seems like only now the media and political establishment are finally waking up to what we have been crying out about for years. On Friday, Albanese put out a statement about the genocide, but did that statement call it a genocide? No. To quote, "The situation in Gaza has gone beyond the world's worst fears. conflict has stolen too many innocent lives. Tens of thousands of civilians are dead. Children are starving. The fact that this is the strongest statement that we have had from our Prime Minister so far is absolutely pathetic. It is a shame. This isn't a situation or a conflict. This is a deliberate military occupation and obliteration of a civilian population. That's what this is. Innocent lives don't get stolen. They aren't just dead. People aren't just being starving. People are being killed. People are being starved. And why are they being denied access to food and water? Why are they being killed? Because the Israeli government is undertaking the genocide that it set up the foundations for years ago. Human rights organizations have called Israel an apartheid state for years. Our federal government, they could immediately cease the sale of arms to Israel. They could impose sanctions and stop all economic and trade relations with Israel. They could, and I see the umbrellas going off, they could increase humanitarian support for Palestinians. They could do all of this. But instead, state and federal Labor governments, they criticize protests. They criticize those of us speaking the truth. They rush and they ram laws through the parliament in the name of social cohesion. Laws that see us slide further into a restricted democracy. They conflate criticism with the state of Israel with anti-Semitism. And it seems to me that the only form of protest that they are comfortable with is when we are in a neat little box, out of sight, out of mind, in a way that we can't make people in power feel uncomfortable. Not unsafe, uncomfortable. But this doesn't happen in a vacuum. The two major parties in this country have been engaged in a race to the bottom for decades on refugees. And we know that wherever there is persecution, people will flee to find safety. We saw the disturbing scenes unfold in the US of mass deportations, of people being held in inhumane conditions, of state-sanctioned cruelty against protesters. We will continue. But this is the thing that I really wanted to convey today. The brutality that we see overseas, just know that the Labour Party here, with the support of the coalition, last year rammed legislation through the parliament that gave them basically the same power to do the same things right here. One, our government now has the power to expand its offshore detention regime. Two, they have the power to authorise strip searches of people in detention. They have the power to confiscate people's mobile phones whilst in detention. Four, they have the power to separate families, including parents, from their Australian citizen children. Five, they have the power to deport people back to danger where they risk persecution, violence, and death. Six, and get this, they now have the power to imprison people that don't help in their own deportation. And seven, in what is basically a Trump-like travel ban, they have the ability to ban entire communities from entering into Australia. Now, I mention this because the deep racism, the deep xenophobia, and the ongoing legacies of white Australia that form our refugee policies, they bleed into how our government reacts to unfolding genocides exactly like what we're seeing in Palestine. Both Labor and Liberal have consistently tried to outdo each other on cruelty to people seeking asylum. But with every lie that these two parties tell, with every lie they tell, we have been here protesting and we have been speaking the truth and holding these politicians to account. We will always be here in the rain as we are today, in the hail and in the sunshine. We will always be here. And that's because
We owe it to the people of Palestine. We owe it to the babies like Muhammad Zakaria Ayab al-Matouk, the 18-month-old whose photos of his mum holding his starved body is being seen around the world. We owe it to Allah, the pediatrician in Gaza, who lost her husband and her 9 children when Israel bombed their home. We owe it to Hind Rajab, that little girl who was in the sheltering in that car when Israel just attacked and murdered her. We owe it to the people dying of malnutrition as we speak, to the people being shot as they try and get food. We owe it to the people whose names we will never know. And we owe it to the people that are the survivors of this genocide and their future descendants. The political establishment in this country, Albanese and his Labour government, they've shown us time and time again that they lack the moral courage, the backbone to actually do something about this genocide. And so long as they are pathetically wringing their hands and writing their statements but not actually doing anything, we are going to be here and we will continue fighting for a free, free Palestine.
Yeah. 3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
You're listening to 3CR at 8:55 a.m. It's Monday, the 28th of July, 2025. It's currently 8:23 a.m. If you're just tuning in or you just tuned in recently, welcome to the show. It's Monday morning. Hope you're staying warm, dry, cold, and yeah, go and eat the frog, so they say. Take down the biggest task of the day first. You just heard a speech from Angelika Panopoulos at yesterday's Free Palestine rally. Angelika is a former Greens mayor and councillor at Marybeck Council. Before that, we played a speech from yesterday's rally by Samim Mosley, who is a community advocate and former independent candidate for the seat of Caldwell. And up next, we'll be playing a song by Palestinian artist Juman called Pearl.
Deep.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM. If you've just tuned in, that was Pearl by Juman. Juman's a Palestinian artist who is, extremely powerful voice. And if you ever come across her, I highly, highly suggest listening to her music because it speaks, it's incredibly mind-blowing. I'll try and share a link in the show notes under Monday Breakfast on the 3CR website after the show. And try and platform some of her music because to get it out there is so important. And supporting our Palestinian brothers and sisters in any way, shape, or format at this point in time is so essential. It's like, if you're listening and obviously what's going on, this genocide is pretty full on, it's pretty hectic, and we're so far into it now, we're like over 20 months into it, and so many consecutive weeks of Palestinian rallies in Melbourne and facing backlash from all different corners, but continuing to show up, the people are continuing to show up and lead with a conscience, and it's incredibly inspiring, and it's a time to be brave, it really is. It's a time to come together and to be vulnerable and connect. But yeah, thanks for listening to today's show. I'll give a quick rundown of what we went through. The main headlines for today, there's new colonial accords finalized in the French Parliament to push their colonial project in Kanaky forward. Women and girls at the center of the worsening homelessness crisis in Melbourne. And the Handala Freedom Flotilla has been intercepted by the Israeli military in international waters. And the segments from today's show. First up, we played a speech from Tuesday Home Time show on 3CR last Tuesday, the 15th, where Jan Bartlett interviewed Nick McClellan, who's a journalist with Islands Business, as he pulled apart Macron's so-called historic agreement regarding New Caledonia and the accords which have recently been passed in French Parliament and will be put to a referendum in so-called New Caledonia in 2026. After that, we heard a speech from Roscoe from Radio Rada at Camp Sovereignty in May this year, talking about the experience on the ground of the indigenous Kanak people in so-called New Caledonia and their experience and voice of resistance against France's ongoing colonial rule and project. After that, we heard a speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally from Samim Mosley. Samim is a community advocate and former independent candidate for the seat of Caldwell. And finally, we heard a speech from Angelica Panopoulos, who at yesterday's Free Palestine rally as well, is a former Greens mayor and councillor at Marybeck Council. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening today. I hope you all have a wonderful Monday. Stay warm, stay dry, and take care of one another. We'll see you next week. I'm not sure if it will just be me again. If so, I'll see you then. Otherwise, Rob will be back. And all the best.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.